careless and silly mistakes at work. As I am a mechanical engineer, these can be financially and potentially very costly in regard to my own safety. I struggle to follow instructions, forget where I have put things, and in general, have trouble paying attention. These things have led me to feel like a failure at work, and after several attempts to leave my area of work, I have embarked on other pursuits that have ended in the same feeling of hopelessness and failure. Back in the 1990s, research that looked at how ADHD affected teenagers at work concluded that they did pretty much as well as other teenagers. Maybe it seemed the symptoms interfered mainly in educational settings, and we didn't need to worry so much about jobs. We now know that's not true. As the last quote attests, ADHD can hurt you even more at work than it has at school. The problem with those 15-year-old studies is that they failed to take into account the types of jobs adolescents usually hold: unskilled, part-time, and temporary. Working at a local rec center, fast food joint, or car wash doesn't demand a lot of attention, thought, or persistence. Maybe ADHD really wouldn't interfere much. But when scientists looked at the transition to adult jobs, a different picture began to emerge. Adults with ADHD were found to change jobs more often and to have more trouble meeting the demands of their jobs, working independently, finishing tasks, and getting along with the boss. They were fired or laid off more often than adults without ADHD. The adults who had the biggest problems with ADHD in the workplace were those who were hyperactive. Makes sense, doesn't it? Teachers might cut you some slack for being fidgety and restless at school because you're either a growing little kid or a hormone-fired teenager. Once you're in the workplace, those who are paying you to be there expect you to stay at your desk or machinery or other workstation to get your work done. Employees who can't are often labeled slackers and eventually let go. How much ADHD hinders you at work may depend on the severity of your symptoms, whether they include hyperactivity, as just noted, and whether you're getting the treatment that the engineer quoted wasn't. It can also depend on factors like these: the type of work you do, whether you're getting any accommodations or supports on the job, how much ADHD prevented you from building the skills and knowledge as a child that we all need in the adult world. Finding the right job for you. It's important to have a job where you get as much of what you need to succeed as you possibly can. Are there jobs you should favor over others because of your symptoms? Is one type of workplace better for you than others? Is the work you'll do as important as the environment in which you'll be doing it? These are questions you should try to answer whether you're just entering the workforce or you already have a job. Naturally, there are no easy answers. Sorry. But you'll be on the right track if you start by knowing what you're up against, and also what you have to offer. If your ADHD includes hyperactivity, a job that requires you to plant yourself in a chair in front of a computer all day is not likely to be ideal. You might toss out any thoughts of becoming an accountant. If your downfall is not being able to finish even short tasks without close supervision, you won't want to become a lone wolf traveling salesperson or a telecommuter working from a home office. But these are points to consider more than they are firm rules. I know many adults with ADHD who have chosen a job or a field that on the surface doesn't seem ideal for the strengths and weaknesses normally associated with the condition or with their particular version of it. Yet they do as well as most people. How? They get support from a supervisor. They've been given the go-ahead and the resources to adapt the workplace and working procedures to their needs. They demonstrate a commitment to building their skills, using principles like the rules in Step 4, and strategies like those you'll find in this chapter. They take medication that greatly reduces the impact of their symptoms, particularly critical if hyperactivity or impulsivity is a problem for you. The engineer whose story you heard at the beginning of this chapter may have chosen the best type of work for himself. He may have been attracted to engineering because of a strength in math and graphics, seeing and manipulating objects instead of reading words. Maybe he knew that this is the type of work that absorbs him. If your ADHD sometimes makes it hard for you to wrench yourself away from activities you enjoy, choosing one of those activities for your career is not a bad approach. Unfortunately, this engineer couldn't succeed. Maybe that was because doing well in a job is never just about the work you do. It also has to do with getting along with your boss and your co-workers. It involves having a physical environment that's conducive to focusing, despite the distractibility of ADHD. It depends on your knowing what types of tasks and situations are hardest for you, and adapting them so you can deal with them. That may mean finding a sympathetic, supportive organization that will accommodate your needs to some extent. But it most certainly means taking responsibility for using the resources available to you outside of what the company is willing to offer, and making a commitment to owning and working with your ADHD. Our engineer said he couldn't concentrate on conversations and couldn't form lasting, healthy relationships. Undoubtedly, that made it hard for him to cultivate cooperation among his co-workers and to enlist the aid of his supervisor in identifying and preventing those silly mistakes he was always making. Maybe he also worked in a busy, noisy office that made it hard to focus. Perhaps he didn't have the storage space to organize his materials, so he wouldn't forget things. Because he hasn't been diagnosed with ADHD, this engineer can't officially request accommodations and isn't receiving the benefit of medication. But he might have found an engineering job at a smaller company or looked for a generally subdued environment. He might have looked for an office designed with private, relatively soundproof workspaces. A company that would pair him up with an assistant or partner who could do the face-to-face contact work for him might have spared him the embarrassment of communication gaffes. Realistically, we can't all pick and choose among a number of job opportunities, especially if the job market happens to be tight. That's why it's important to map as many different routes to success as you can. Know what type of work might keep you interested and be doable every day. Figure out what type of environment is one in which you're likely to thrive. Know what types of work procedures will keep you on track and which ones will throw you off. Figure out what types of people will inspire and possibly help you to succeed. Then do your best to find as many of these favorable elements as you can in any job you consider. For most adults with ADHD, finding the right job will be a matter of identifying the right mix of the work you do, including the procedures, and the environment, including the people you'll be doing it in. Challenges in one can be offset by benefits in the other. The way many people find such a match is, unfortunately, through trial and error. That process can be painful if it doesn't lead fairly quickly to a good fit. So, another route to consider is to find a professional life coach or vocational counselor who works with people who have ADHD. This person can at least help you define your needs accurately. A coach can also help you identify lines of work that might be good for you. And a coach can train you in job interviewing. Research has shown that adults with ADHD don't interview as well as other adults either. The type of work. Some jobs are, by nature, more ADHD-friendly than others. For instance, these occupations have proven better for some of my adult patients and may be ADHD-friendlier than others. The military. The military ensures greater structure and discipline, more immediate feedback, and greater provision of benefits, medical care, dental care, etc., than other fields. Door-to-door sales. This type of job is often a good fit for adults with ADHD because it involves freedom of movement, changes in setting, mobility, a flexible schedule, frequent meetings with new contacts, opportunities for social interaction, and passion for the product, and a value is put on being talkative. Often adults with ADHD need some assistance back at the home office with completing reports and paperwork, but while in the field, they seem to do well. Drug rep. Individuals with at least a BA degree in biology, nursing, medicine, pharmaceuticals, or a related field may find this calling perfect for all of the same reasons given for door-to-door sales. Carpenter, plumber, electrician, landscaper, tile layer, roofer, construction contractor. These and other trades may be more ADHD-friendly because the individual is doing more manual than mental work, is outdoors more often, has frequent changes in job sites, gets to deal with a lot of different people, and is paid an hourly wage, which provides for more immediate consequences than a salaried position with its less frequent paycheck. Emergency medical technician, emergency room physician, police officer, firefighter. Like the jobs previously mentioned, these occupations do not keep people confined to offices or require hours of sustained mental effort or concentration. They also provide some excitement and thrills, and even life-threatening situations that can provide the burst of adrenaline some adults with ADHD claim helps them focus their mind in a crisis. Again, greater freedom of movement, changes in work settings, and greater interaction with others may combine with the sensation-producing nature of these jobs to make them more friendly to those with ADHD. It is not that people with ADHD are better than others at handling crises, but that in a crisis, the person with ADHD is at no disadvantage because there is little or no preparation needed to deal with the situation. After all, that is the definition of a crisis, an unexpected yet serious event. Sports-related occupations. Becoming a professional athlete is not in the cards for most of us, including those with ADHD. But some talented athletes have found that ADHD does not exact a big price for success. Think about Michael Phelps, Payne Stewart, the late pro golfer, and others who succeeded despite having ADHD. Even if you are not a professional caliber athlete, you can find many athletic or sports-related occupations, from being a physical education teacher and school sports coach, to working for or even managing an outdoor sports park, to teaching others your sport. Surfing, skiing, windsurfing, hiking, mountain climbing, etc. Or working where professional athletes train or work, being on the ski patrol at Whiteface Mountain, New York, or Vail, Colorado. Serving as a lifeguard at major beaches, teaching water skiing in Winter Garden, Florida. Working in or running a gym or health club, etc. Don't forget the park services. Even though not considered a sport, working as a ranger for a national or state park can provide the features of an ADHD-friendly job outlined before, and a rewarding career as well. Computer technician or consultant. This is the sort of job where people with good computer knowledge and skills can combine these interests with their ADHD traits with less impairment than in other fields. In these sorts of jobs, the individual is roving throughout a business, hospital, or other venue to help people with their personal computer problems at work. Often called the computer or technology help desk, these consultants respond to various requests to install or troubleshoot desktop or other personal computers as calls come into the desk for assistance. Food service industry. I know many adults with ADHD who have gone into culinary arts and become chefs for area restaurants, resorts, cafeterias, and other employers, and found the work to be creative and relatively unaffected by their ADHD-related deficits. Cooking requires a focus on the moment, the immediate steps to create the finished product, and a flair for creativity with ingredients, while not demanding long-range planning, lots of working memory, or persistence at unrewarding activities for long periods of time. Unusual or flexible hours. With the sporadic ebb and flow pacing of the work, from slow to peak meal prep hours, and then slow again. Can add just the right touch of crisis and excitement during the peak meal hours to keep you alert and focused on the work at hand. Self-employment. Starting a small business, or just being a sole proprietor, can prove ADHD-friendly. Whether you open your own bakery, run a landscaping, computer consulting, or personal fitness coaching business, or work in one of the trades listed previously. The hours can be more flexible than when you work with others. You are your own boss. The consequences for working, or not working, are immediate. No work, no food or rent money. And the work settings can vary considerably from day to day in some of these self-employed occupations, to allow for the restlessness that many adults with ADHD experience. Photographer or videographer. Many of the adults who assisted me in creating my various DVDs on ADHD, or with whom I have worked in various media projects, were themselves adults with the disorder. They were able to deal quite well with the day-to-day changes in settings where they would be filming, the diversity of stories or topics they were asked to cover, the short bursts of work interspersed with breaks, and of course, the frequent opportunities for interacting with a variety of people, all of which were a good fit for their short attention span, propensity for boredom in tedious environments, and difficulties with sustained persistence across hours or days and projects or tasks. Actor, comedian, performing artist, musician. These professions can allow your impulsive emotions not only to be expressed, but also to contribute to your onstage charisma or persona, while providing frequent changes in the setting and nature of the work, freedom of movement, limited need for long-range planning and organization, low requirement for self-motivation, given the immediate and intrinsic pleasure people may get from engaging in these professions. Howie Mandel, Deal or No Deal, has ADHD, yet has been quite successful in show business. Ty Pennington, Extreme Makeover, Home Edition, likewise has adult ADHD, yet has served as the central character in a show that has done much good for needy families. These are just some examples of occupations that may prove to be especially friendly to those having ADHD. If you use the descriptions as a springboard for your imagination, you can undoubtedly come up with other career paths that would be suitable for you. But you also need to consider the working environment. The working environment. Do noise and other distractions keep you from focusing no matter what the work is? If so, an open room full of desks could be a disaster for you. Even bays that have clusters with a small number of desks might be a problem, because it will be tough to block out your coworkers. Cubicles with opaque walls that keep you from noticing the movement of passers-by are better. A private office might be best of all if you can get it. The ideal would be a workspace away from the main traffic pattern, but close to your supervisor or other person to whom you'll be accountable. If you have an office, keep the door closed. If someone happens by, meet the person at the door and lean against the jamb, so he or she doesn't waltz in and take a seat just to visit. Don't offer coffee or food, but be gracious and ask immediately how you can help the person. Co-workers can be huge sources of distraction or off-task activities, so limit such interference when you can. Will you be working at a computer with email? If so, resolve to check it briefly at the beginning of the day for urgent messages from supervisors or co-workers. Then shut off the email program, and don't check it again until lunch or, better yet, the end of the day. This gives you more time in the middle of the day to focus on the projects you need to tackle, and eliminates one of the greatest sources of distraction and low productivity in the workplace. Is the internet available? Keep your internet browser closed as well, so that pop-up ads, chimes, or other attention-getting stimuli cannot disrupt your concentration on the projects that need your attention. And definitely avoid text messaging or tweeting friends or others during the workday by shutting down your cell phone for periods when your concentration on tasks or projects is important. As with email, you can check your phone messages 2 to 3 times per day, beginning, middle, end, and keep up with anything that may be urgent and important. But most emails, and especially text messages, are not relevant to your immediate work, and often are just attempts to socialize by others who cannot focus on their work either. Will your assigned space help you get organized? If there's no room for you to put your files and other materials, you could spend the majority of your workday looking for what you need. Will you be able to keep track of the passing hours? If you have no windows, no wall clocks, and no other way to tell what time it is, you'll have to rely solely on your own tools to keep track of the time and stay on schedule. That can be hard for adults with ADHD, who cannot seem to harness their internal clocks to keep them functioning in a timely manner. Work procedures. How much flexibility is there? Sometimes a job interview instantly reveals that the company expects the job to be done in a very specific way and has no resources available for bending the way things have been done in the past. Always ask questions about how the hirer will expect the goals to be met. How long would you expect X to take to get done? How much advance notice will I have of an upcoming project? How often would I check in with you on my progress? In what form would you expect to receive reports? Will I be working on my own or with a team? Beware the interviewer who says it's a very loose kind of operation, and that everyone can get the job done in the best way for the employee, with little or no supervision. Ask questions like the preceding, and you may quickly find out that there are actually much stricter requirements than the person has let on. Or, if you don't ask for specifics, you might find out on the job that loose is an understatement, and that you're expected to be completely self-sufficient. This may make it tough to introduce the idea of making yourself accountable to someone for step-by-step progress on tasks. Are there established rules or guidelines for certain procedures? Most adults with ADHD benefit from having a set of rules to follow so that they don't have to try to figure out what's acceptable and what's not. If this firm hasn't established such rules, will a supervisor or mentor be available to clarify priorities when you're new at the job? Will you be expected to be a self-starter? You might find that overwhelming and would want to steer clear of jobs like this. Or you might find it's easy to be a self-starter, but harder to be a self-motivator once a task is underway. Which leads to the next question. Does the job offer built-in frequent incentives and rewards? The more, the better. Virtue may be its own reward for other people, but ADHD says, show me the money, and on a regular basis. If there are no opportunities for motivating you other than those you provide yourself, find another job, or resolve to collect every type of external cue and reward at your disposal. Do you have to punch a time clock, literally or figuratively? My research has shown that adults with ADHD tend to be less punctual for work and appear to manage their time less efficiently. If strict work hours and punctuality are essential, or time is of the essence in this business, it may prove to be your doom. Or, all else being favorable, you could choose to turn this to your advantage and make it all part of your commitment to keeping track of time. The people. Who will be your supervisor? Someone you'll work with every day face-to-face? Someone you'll be expected to report to throughout the day remotely, by email or phone? Someone you'll rarely see at all who will occasionally just send you a list of objectives? You're likely to need a fair amount of hands-on oversight and interaction. If your supervisor won't be able to give you much guidance or keep you accountable, is someone else available to do that and serve as a mentor? Will your supervisor be supportive of what you need to get the job done? Whether the job can be adapted to suit your needs often depends largely on your supervisor. If your boss takes a sink-or-swim attitude with employees and doesn't give a hoot about individual needs, you should probably find another job. Will your coworkers be supportive too? Or will you be swimming with sharks? If this business's approach to reaching goals or achieving excellence is to pit employees against each other in cutthroat competition, can you handle it? Some adults with ADHD have developed a heightened sensitivity to the responses they get from others. Given good reason to believe your coworkers are out to get you, will you be inspired to beat them, or will you find it impossible to get your work done? Should I reveal that I have ADHD when I'm interviewing for a job? If you're going to assert your right to receive workplace accommodations under the American with Disabilities Act, yes. You may have to invoke that law to get what you need. If you are going to work in a field that requires periodic training, testing, or certification, you may need special accommodations for test taking available through the Act. In that case, you'll have to provide paperwork to document your diagnosis. But you may be able to get what you need just by finding the right type of workplace. That is why it's so important to ask the questions listed before. If you can tell that the company and your supervisor will be flexible and supportive without your having to name your disorder, you may be able to keep that information private. Many adults prefer not to disclose their ADHD, and you might not have to if you do everything in your power to minimize your symptoms. This is another reason to avail yourself of medication. If it normalizes or greatly reduces your symptoms, ADHD won't need to come up at all. Laying the groundwork for success on the job. Many of the tools and preparation steps for doing well at work parallel those for doing well at school. Here's a quick rundown of what you can do to give yourself the best possible foundation for occupational achievement. Familiarize yourself with the provisions of the Americans with Disabilities Act and the accommodations typically available in the workplace. You may want to avail yourself of these accommodations at some point, even if not right now. Practice, practice, practice the strategies under the 8 Everyday Rules for Success, given in Step 4. When you're considering taking a particular job, think about how these rules might benefit you in that workplace. Consider medication if you aren't already taking it. This may be especially helpful if you're making the transition from the less demanding jobs of adolescence to the adult jobs that require a lot more achievement, impose a lot more responsibility, and involve using a lot more skills. As with school, the long-acting forms, sometimes with a single dose of the immediate-release medicine added, will keep you going throughout most of the workday. Find a coach or mentor at work. This can be a coworker, friend, or supportive supervisor. Anyone you can make yourself accountable to every day for the work that you believe needs to get done. As with school, it helps to meet twice a day for 5 minutes at a time, which is why it's useful to have your supervisor or other coach in close proximity. Set goals during your first meeting, and then review what you've accomplished during the second meeting. Recruiting a coach or mentor is critical and can benefit you far beyond accountability. If you gain this person's respect, others will hear about it, and you may find yourself with allies you didn't actively cultivate. So make it a priority to do what you've agreed to do with your coach or mentor. Show your appreciation through small tokens of thanks. Resist any urge to seek this person's advice or help with personal problems. Stick to company business. You can always see a life coach if you need help with personal issues. Identify the disability specialist in the human resources department at your company. This is the person you will provide with documentation of your ADHD and the person who will explain the available workplace accommodations. This person may also work with your supervisor to make sure you get the accommodations you choose. If you need therapy or medication, the disability specialist will be able to refer you to psychologists, counselors, and physicians, usually psychiatrists, who have contracts with the employer for providing employee mental health services. Gather whatever tools will help you keep track of tasks, goals, deadlines, promises, appointments, and any other time-related information you need to remember. Day planners. PDAs like Blackberries, your journal, the calendar on your email system. A tactile cueing device, such as the Motivator, which can be set to vibrate at certain intervals or at random to remind you to stay on task. Get a recorder such as the SmartPen digital recorder to record important meetings with the permission of your supervisor. Reclaiming the edge that ADHD tries to take away. There's no denying that it's a competitive world. If you don't do well at your job, you won't get a raise or promotion. You might not even get to keep the job. And there's always someone waiting in line to claim it. It's also human nature to want to achieve and excel and be respected by our peers. So do everything you can to be at the top of your game at work despite ADHD. Find out if there is a library or information center that contains resources for further learning on the job. If so, you want to make a habit of using it to give yourself the informational edge that ADHD dulls. Also, attend any extra information sessions offered after hours. And if a seminar or a workshop is offered on a volunteer basis, volunteer to go. It may sound boring, but a change of scene may be even more beneficial to you than to most adults. Take notes throughout meetings that threaten to bore you to tears. Note-taking may remind you of some of your least favorite moments in school, but laptops make it easier to record what's going on, especially if they have a handwriting recognition tablet or screen. And the sheer physical motion of taking notes will keep you focused, to say nothing of providing a great resource that you can refer to later if you're having trouble recreating what everyone said. Use the SQ4R method when you have lots of reading to do before a meeting or other event. Walk around the block or the halls, or come up with an excuse to go down to the convenience store in the lobby or around the corner before a long meeting or other quiet period where you'll have to stay seated and be attentive. A brisk walk of just a few minutes will improve your concentration for about an hour afterward. Cultivating allies at work. Step 2 explained why good relationships with others often elude adults with ADHD. Faulty working memory can make it hard for you to learn to read people's feelings, understand social cues, or figure out society's rules and customs. Trouble controlling emotions can leave you exposed to censure from others for imposing your feelings on them inappropriately. Leaping before you look, talking when you shouldn't, and other impulsive behavior garners disapproval. The mere fact that you've been exposed to a lot of criticism, possibly for most of your life, can make you touchy and overcautious in approaching people for help or friendship. For this reason, you might not be facile at recruiting allies and friendly colleagues. You might butt heads with your boss. Yet it's widely known today that success at work, and everywhere else, can be as much a function of social skills and savoir-faire as it is of practical skills, knowledge, intelligence, and drive. Here are some specific ideas for cultivating the cooperation, compassion, and goodwill of your coworkers. These ideas will not only make your workday more pleasant, but will get you an edge in meeting the demands of your job. Try some cooperative coworker tutoring when you need to learn something substantial on the job. New software, new regulatory codes, new legislation, new technology, whatever you need to master to keep performing well on the job. Maybe each of you reads a chapter of a new manual and then explains it to the other. If your department doesn't already operate using Teams, set one up on your own. Be on the lookout for the coworkers who have the skills and interests you lack. Figure out what you can offer that is not a strength of theirs. Identify a departmental goal that you can achieve faster and better working together than you could singly. Find a coworker who will have your back, and do the same for that person. If either of you forgets materials, information, or anything else you need while away from the office, the other will be there to supply it. This can be a boon if you don't have secretaries or assistants, and you need information not available via computer when you're traveling for business. Be fair and reasonable in your requests for support and accommodations made to your supervisor, the disability specialist, and even co-workers who have shown a willingness to help you out. One person I know said she found it just as helpful that her human resources contact would tell her straight out what the company could not do to accommodate her needs as what it could do. The parameters had been drawn clearly, and the employee kept these limitations in mind whenever she felt tempted to ask for more help than she was getting. Mutual respect resulted. Schedule supervisor review meetings more often than at annual or semi-annual performance and salary review meetings. Every 3 to 6 weeks is a good interval to aim for. The person you meet with may not be your direct supervisor, but someone further up the ladder who can give you another perspective on how you're doing. Who this person would be depends on the structure of your company. Requests you make for this feedback may not be met by the person you ask first, but any higher up will respect your desire to monitor and better your performance. 26. Money. Things like balancing my checkbook, paying traffic tickets, getting regular dental checkups, and other routine things seem to elude me. But hey, I finally pay the rent and utility bills on time, so that's a victory. I haven't had my utility shut down for non-payment for quite a while. When you have ADHD, there's a money pit everywhere you turn. Any opportunity to spend can turn into an impulse purchase, and often does. Money problems among adults with ADHD run the gamut from overspending to non-payment of bills to failure to plan for retirement. Our research has found that adults with ADHD make a lot of impulse purchases, had high credit card balances, exceeded their credit limits more than others, made bill, loan, and rent payments late or not at all, had their cars repossessed more often than others, had lower credit ratings, were more likely to have no savings, were less likely to save for retirement, bounced checks more often than others, often failed to save receipts that could document money-saving tax deductions and other documents for their income tax returns, lost friends after borrowing money and not repaying it. If you are like most adults with ADHD, you've experienced a lot of these problems. You probably understand why the woman quoted before thought not having her utilities turned off was a major achievement. Money trouble can permeate, even rule, your life. And it's a lot harder to get out of than it is to get into. But you can still take the whole situation kind of lightly if you don't look squarely at how many different ways money can be a trap for you. You make an impulse purchase, forget to pay your rent, neglect saving, and ignore your credit limits all at the same time. Taken separately, each transgression can seem kind of harmless. Oh yeah, I know I shouldn't have bought that new iPod, but it can store so many more songs. I really need it. So I forgot to pay my Visa bill. No big deal. I'll just pay the late fee. I have plenty of time to save. I'm only in my 20s. None of these actions is harmless. One financial problem has a way of spawning a number of other money troubles. Exceed your credit limit and pay your bills late often enough, and your credit rating plummets. You could easily be denied a mortgage or a car loan when you need one. Continuing to pay rent, or having to live with a clunker that needs constant costly repairs, can absorb your paycheck, leaving you nothing to save. Then what do you do when you suddenly have a car accident and need to pay the deductibles on both your health insurance and car insurance, and have no cash? Money problems are also notorious for causing relationship conflict. When people have difficulty with handling money, they often borrow it from friends, family, or even co-workers. So maybe you're not only suffering from your own money problems, but also placing a burden on others to help you extricate yourself. Money matters are reported to be one of the biggest sources of disputes among married couples and those living together, even when no one has ADHD. For you, ADHD probably makes these disagreements much more frequent and even more hostile. Managing a household budget together can be tough when you have differing abilities to do so. Why money matters are so challenging for you, and what you can do about it. You don't plan to end up in financial trouble. You may, in fact, keep resolving not to go shopping today, and not to buy anything advertised in an internet pop-up. You might tell yourself today is the day to transfer some money from checking to savings. Maybe you tell yourself while you're at it, you might as well see if you have any bills that are due. So why don't you follow through on those intentions? Because ADHD won't let you. It's time to take charge of your ADHD and your finances. Start by bringing into crisp focus how the deficits caused by ADHD steer you wrong, and how you can steer yourself back in the right direction. Money in the mind's eye. Impulsive shopping can be compulsive shopping when your nonverbal working memory is weak. You can't picture what happened last time you bought an expensive item you didn't need. You can't bring the future into sharp enough relief to put off the purchase till you've saved the cash. You haven't developed the self-awareness to realize that for you, walking into an antique store is like opening the gates of hell. The mind's eye is particularly important in controlling the impulse to buy things you don't need or can't afford. Using strategies from step 4, you could externalize the desire to resist spending money by keeping a photo of a long-term goal, a vacation spot, a home, a bike for one of your kids, etc., in your pocket to pull out whenever you feel the urge to buy. You might train yourself to say out loud before you pull out your wallet, do I really need this? Then you can turn on your imaginary widescreen TV and watch a film of yourself opening your credit card bill last time you overspent. Your finances and the mind's voice. Remember, the mind's voice is your backup when the mind's eye is myopic. If you find yourself feeling the urge to pull out your credit card, and you really can't call up a visual picture of what happened last time you overspent, interview yourself. If you're in a store, leave and do this on the sidewalk. As I mentioned in step 4, you won't get hauled away for being delusional. People will just think you're on your cell phone when you talk to yourself about whether this purchase or withdrawal is wise. If you tend to put off bill paying even when you've set an alarm to remind you to do it, this is another time you can talk to yourself about why you need to do it right now. The mind's voice is also the faculty that allows you to formulate and use rules. Set certain rules about spending and saving, and then repeat those rules to yourself quietly when under pressure from your ADHD to break them. Or write them down on a card you keep banded together with your credit card, so you can't access the credit card without the rules card. If forgetting is the main reason you don't pay bills on time, all of the reminder devices discussed in step 4, plus your journal, can provide you with the necessary cues. The mind's heart in the world of money. Are you an emotional spender? Are you the person who always buys a round of drinks at the pub when you're feeling great? The one who needs a new outfit when down? If you're mad at your landlord, do you show him by forgetting to pay the rent? Does not having the cash to go out with friends make you feel so bad that you decide to put the charges on your credit card? You're going to have to pull out your whole bag of mental imagery and self-talk tricks to recognize when your emotions are carrying you away, and how to get control. Also, try to stick to a healthy lifestyle. Sleep deprivation, overconsumption of caffeine or alcohol, drug use, lack of exercise, and poor diet can all make you more vulnerable to daily stress and make it harder to control your emotions. Don't forget that you can use your emotions for good, too. Hate bill paying? Feel the future. Do everything you can to feel the relief of getting it done. Can't motivate yourself to put money in savings when your paycheck is burning a hole in your pocket? Feel how great it will be to take it out when you pay for your Caribbean vacation. Financial planning and problem solving in the mind's playground. For many adults, ADHD or no ADHD, Money matters offer bean counters and number crunchers, which is usually a not-so-nice way of saying, I don't know how to do financial planning, how to budget, how to oversee your investments, how to stop getting hit with late fees and hassled by collection agencies. As step four emphasized, make it physical. Use tangible objects and graphic tools to manipulate the numbers whenever possible. The following will give you some ideas, but remember the basics too. Make lists of steps to complete financial tasks you find daunting. Record your spending habits in your journal so you can take a look back at the patterns that are hurting you and any that are serving you well. Getting control of your money. Fortunately, you've got a lot of resources at your fingertips for taking back control of your financial present and future. There are many strategies for discouraging spending. Tools and cues can help you meet your financial obligations on time. You can set up systems that enforce saving, so you don't have to fight the urge to spend everything you earn over and over. A new approach to money management. Here are a few ideas for getting started on a better path. Take advantage of community resources if you're in trouble. It's paramount that you become more aware of community resources, such as assistance from banks, credit unions, and others who may be able to help you address these money management problems. Debt reorganization, credit counseling, budgeting advice, and bankruptcy assistance are all available. If you are massively in debt, and it seems hopeless, or you're thinking of bankruptcy, get free credit counseling first from a bank or credit union. They can often help you reorganize your finances, consolidate debt, and renegotiate unusually high interest rates, and meet with you monthly to keep you and your budget on track, and keep you accountable to someone besides yourself. Let your spouse, partner, or even parent manage your money. Doing this presumes this person does not also have ADHD and can be trusted to manage your finances with your best interests in mind. It might be something to consider if you feel overwhelmed by the problems you're having and find it impossible to control your spending or other financial habits. You can always agree to do this for a preset temporary time period or until a certain goal, such as paying off a debt or accumulating a certain amount of savings, is reached. Turn over your paycheck to this person. Let the person allocate sufficient cash to you to meet daily expenses. Then work together to see that monthly bills, loans, and credit cards are paid regularly. If appropriate, have him or her set up an automatic bill-paying system with your bank, so that some important bills like rent, mortgage, and car loan payments are automatically deducted from your checking account each month. Budget. Make a monthly budget sheet that shows all your monthly expenses, including 1/12 of your annual expenses, those that you may pay just once per year, such as taxes, car insurance, and homeowner's insurance. You need to have a monthly financial plan with all your bills listed in front of you, so you can see what you owe. This budget needs to be less than what you make per month. Keep it out on your desk at home where you do paperwork or on your dresser so you can refer to it often. Spending as you go each month is a recipe for disaster, not to mention having your utilities turned off and your car repossessed. Start living within your means today. Do not spend more each month than you earn, and then try to use credit cards, loans, or other means of borrowing to see you through the month. You need to get your living expenses below 90% of your monthly earnings, while saving that remaining 10%. Enlist the help of a competent, trusted relative, an accountant, or a bank employee in figuring out your expenses and what method is best for saving. Set up a system of accounts and deposits for enforced savings. Have your employer put 10% of your pre-tax earnings into a retirement plan, tax-deferred, such as a 401k, 403b, KEO, or IRA. Then have your after-tax paycheck direct deposited into your checking account. Once it is there, have your bank move 10% of it into a savings account automatically each month. The less you save your cash, the less you can spend it impulsively. You also need an emergency savings account. This savings is to become your emergency fund for those unexpected emergency expenses, such as car repairs and medical expenses not covered by insurance. If that does not leave you enough for your usual monthly expenses, cut down on those expenses instead. You can find enough fat in your budget to cut your expenses by 10% so you can start saving. Try to get health and disability insurance through your employer. If they don't have it, try to find a similar job that does. If you can't, consider working for the local, state, or federal government, which nearly always provides these benefits. Unexpected medical bills can kill your chances of financial independence. Balance your bank statement monthly without fail. Don't just wing it or guess. Having little idea of how much money you have in your account or accounts at any one time is one of the biggest causes of bounced checks, credit card overuse, and debt accumulation. You keep getting caught with less money than you thought you had, and so borrow to make up the shortfall. And those forms of piracy, known as high overdraft fees that banks now charge, can mount up quickly, siphoning off cash you actually need, and maybe even result in your exceeding whatever balances you typically have in your accounts. Keep all receipts as you get them. Put them in your wallet. Each night, when you take your wallet out of your pants pocket or remove it from your purse, take these receipts and put them in a file. You can use this file to help keep track of what you are spending and to store the receipts, which will be very useful for preparing your taxes and getting the most of your available deductions. Curbing your spending. Besides the ideas for controlling impulse buying described earlier, try these. Operate on a cash basis. Take out cash from your checking account only when you absolutely need it. Carry as little with you as possible, so you're not tempted to spend it impulsively on stuff you don't need. Do not carry a credit or ATM card, if at all possible. Get rid of all store credit cards. Keep one general card like MasterCard or Visa, and put a sticker on it that reads, "For emergency use only." Transfer all unpaid balances on store cards to this single card, and work to pay off the balance as soon as you possibly can. Do not go to a mall or department store if there is nothing that you need to buy. And I mean need, not want to buy. The last place a person with ADHD needs to be is in a store or mall with all those attractive goodies crying out, "Buy me." So the simplest solution is not to go. Don't lend anyone other than your children any money. Period. And even your children are not a good bet to repay you. So keep those loans limited to educational expenses or necessities, not things like clothing or entertainment. Odds are you will not see that money again. If you give money to someone else, you'd better view it as the gift it most likely will be, not as a loan. Stay away from casinos. They always win. Don't play cards for money, and certainly not more than pennies a hand. You are way too impulsive to be around gambling activities, so, like shopping, avoid such places, where impulsive spending can get the best of you. Take advantage of cognitive behavioral treatments for impulse buying, if no other measures help. If you find it hard to stop shopping and spending on things you don't need, get professional help from a psychologist or financial counselor. If you must carry a cell phone, make it the cheapest model out there and the cheapest calling plan you can find. You don't need a camera or internet, email or Twitter access everywhere you go. No one is that important. Stop using your cell phone as an entertainment device and start using it as a practical tool to call the people you must, and to hear only from those you must hear from, and nothing more. Check out Cricket, Jitterbug, or one of the other prepaid or discount calling plans. You do not need an iPhone or BlackBerry unless your employer is paying for it. Getting control of credit. Besides paying off credit cards and not carrying them, try these ideas. Never borrow money for something you consume, wear, or use for entertainment. Flat screen TVs, iPhones, etc. You borrow just for buying a home, getting a car, maybe, or some other reasonable investment. Do not sign any contracts for credit, loans, or similar commitments without having a money manager, your relative or a professional, review it first to see if you really need to be doing this. Never, ever, ever take out a payday loan. The storefront businesses that offer these loans charge interest rates that are so high, you will never be able to get out of debt. This is legalized loan sharking. Stay away from it. Period. 27. Relationships. So my wife tells this psychologist we went to see for marital problems that being married to me is like having another child around the house, and she already has three of them and doesn't need a fourth. So that if he cannot help us with our marriage and straighten me out, she's going to leave me. She tells him I can't seem to follow through on anything, that I have projects half-finished lying around all over the house, and that I cannot have anything ready on time when it's supposed to be done. She has taken over paying all the bills, because when I had that job, we had our phone and electric service shut down twice, because I forgot to pay the monthly bills, or didn't pay them on time. I seem to burn through relationships with others a lot faster than the other women I know. My boyfriends sometimes called me a space cadet, because when they were talking to me about things, especially things that meant a lot to them, I was just staring at them, or daydreaming, and clearly not listening. Or I would just interrupt them to talk about something that just came into my mind. Once I was dating this really nice guy, and we were getting really serious about each other, and then, on a whim, I met this guy in a bar one night when my girlfriends and I were out partying, and I just went back to his apartment and slept with him on an impulse. And my boyfriend heard about it from one of the girls with me that night, and that was the end of that relationship. I don't know why I do things like that on an impulse. And I can't seem to concentrate on what others are saying to me for very long, or stay committed to a good relationship. I mean, I can be my own worst enemy in my life. ADHD doesn't play fair. Put as much time or more into education and training as your peers, and you might still lag behind. Start a job with abundant energy and optimism, and you could end up at the bottom of the promotion list anyway. I'm sure you also want an intimate partner, good friends, and supportive relatives. But you might find that new connections don't stick. Old ties don't bind. You have more acquaintances than true friends. The way ADHD stacks the deck against you can hurt more in your personal, social life than anywhere else. You probably don't need a psychologist to tell you how ADHD and its underlying problem with self-control creates these social difficulties. If you had the condition as a child, you may still carry the scars of being treated as different or undesirable to be around. Today, you might look enviously at others who seem to make friends without trying, who have long-time spouses or partners, who can call on parents and siblings and colleagues for company and comfort. A quick look at the DSM symptoms illustrates how many ways ADHD can make you give the wrong impression and have the exact opposite effect you want to have on the people you interact with. Problems with persistence can make it hard to pursue a promising love interest. Being distracted during a conversation can easily offend the other person, who will likely think you're bored or annoyed. Saying whatever pops into your head ensures that some of it will be the wrong thing, and brand you as tactless and inconsiderate, when maybe all you felt was enthusiasm. Becoming known for excessive talking can make the people you ought to see most run the other way when they see you coming. Fail to follow through, and people will think it's not that you can't, but that you won't, and that you lack character. Avoiding multi-step tasks can just make you look selfish, as if you try to shrug off tough chores in the hope that the burden will land on someone else's shoulders, These are just a few examples. They don't even cover all 18 symptoms, nor do they touch on three aspects of self-control.